This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. And today, well, we welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. Susan usually joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. She's here with us today on the first Tuesday of the month because yesterday was a holiday, Labor Day. I welcome your questions for Susan. If you would like to talk with Susan, give us a call. Here are the phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness, and she's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, the publisher Coach's Choice. Questions about diet, nutrition, and exercise, they are invited this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Hope you had a good weekend.
Yes, it was a beautiful weekend.
Yeah, nice to have an extra day, isn't it?
Yes, for sure.
Okay. Well, where do you want to start this afternoon?
Well, certainly going into fall. I guess now we're almost in fall, but the school year and everything. One thing I thought would be good to talk about is maybe just some ideas on some good breakfasts, because we continue to hear the studies that come out about how we concentrate better with breakfast, how we know our kids do better in school with breakfast. I was just listening to something the other day. It might have been on public radio. It might have been on NPR.
Morning Edition.
Morning Edition, yeah. And just kind of a reminder of how when kids have a solid breakfast, how their concentration is so much better and mm-hmm. how they can remember things better. And so I think, you know, one thing that is real important we know with breakfast is to try to mix a protein and a carbohydrate. And I think one of the researchers was talking about that too, making sure there was protein with your breakfast, which is easy to kind of bypass if you're not thinking about it. And so, you know, really looking for anybody, but especially for kids, on trying to eat a breakfast that might mix something like, when I think of proteins, of course, we always think of meat. So that's an easy thing. But even something like a ham sandwich, which is really easy and fast, and if a kid likes that, that's a good breakfast with a glass of orange juice or something, or trying to get in milk or yogurt or cottage cheese or some type of protein like that, or even eggs, which are really easy and fast. I had a client the other day, and I was talking about how you can scramble one egg in the microwave, scramble it 30 minutes.
30 minutes?
Or excuse me, I guess I'd be pretty green at that point, but 30 seconds, and then take it out and mix it another maybe 20 or 30 seconds, and there's your egg, and it's so easy. And this client was saying, I never thought about making an egg in the microwave.
Or having a couple of hard-boiled eggs in the fridge.
Exactly. Hard-boiled eggs, which work really, really well. And that kind of brings up the whole question about eggs that people have. Gosh, can I really eat them? Can I not? And certainly we know unless you have high cholesterol, you probably need to limit your yolks to 3 per week. But otherwise, for most people, if they have an egg or two a day, and it's probably no problem because it's quality protein. It's in the yolk, we also have essential fatty acids. We have other good things, vitamin E. And so if cholesterol is not a big issue for you, it's probably okay to have one a day anyway for most of us. So
We've got a listener waiting to talk with us. So let's go and talk with this caller. Person in on line two. Good afternoon. Hello? Line two?
Is that me?
That's you.
Oh,
hi.
He told me line one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well,
we got you.
I had a problem.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I heard you say that you can advise people about exercise. Is that right?
Yeah, general exercise. I'm not a personal trainer or an exercise physiologist, but of course, being a dietitian, activity and exercise is definitely part of what I look at for clients as well.
Well, my question is that I'm in my 70s. And I'm just slouching all the time. And I'm getting a very round back. And even when I stand up as straight as I can, I still have this hump on my back. And so And then I tried to lie on the floor and put my hands way above my head, and that really hurts. I can hardly do that. So how can I, is there any exercise I can do to get rid of this terrible humpback?
Well, I think one thing it sounds like would be really helpful is to maybe get an appointment with the physical therapist, because they would probably be the best person, if particularly if you're having any kind of pain, if you're trying to do any certain exercises, because they could certainly give you, sometimes it's related to just your own, you know, maybe something physically going on, but sometimes it's, we get in a habit of not being fully stretched out. And
I know
my sister's a physical therapist, and she does a lot more stretching with her clients than I thought she would ever do. But because that's a big part of it, is learning how to stretch your back in particular. You know, there are certain stretches, for example, that you can do in a doorway, you know, when you put your arms up, your shoulders up, and you're stretching your shoulders back. And that's a typical kind of exercise that, you know, might be prescribed for you. But a lot of it is also strengthening. Sometimes if we strengthen our abdominals more, then we're able to keep our shoulders back better. And so there are ways that maybe certain strengthening exercises might be really helpful, particular to you. And so, but I do think, I always tell my clients, if you have any pain with any kind of exercise.
Well, I don't have any pain. It's just that I can't, you know, it's really hard to make my arms reach all the way up.
Right, right. I mean, something else that you might want to consider, I don't know if you've ever done anything like yoga or some of the other activities that are not necessarily pounding exercises, but they're really more related to stretching exercises,
right,
as well. Sometimes
that's
swim. A
I do swim. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
swimming. Tai Chi.
Yeah. Hmm? What?
Tai Chi.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, bears looking into, I think.
Oh, okay.
Okay. It's spelled T-A-I-C-H-I.
And that's an exercise?
It's a
stretching something?
How would you describe
it?
Yeah,
it's a type of martial arts where it's...
But it's not... It's very gentle.
Mm-hmm.
It involves breathing and gentle movements.
Mm-hmm. Slow movements, and it's also related to balance. It's really helpful for balance. There have been a lot of studies they've done here at the U of I within kinesiology department, really looking at Tai Chi as a way to gain strength and balance, particularly as we age.
So they get your back straighter?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't
yeah,
really?
To help with balance and help with posture and those kinds of things too. So it would be worth, looking in at the local fitness centers as well, the kind of programs that they might have and classes, because it's really helpful going through, whether it's yoga or Tai Chi or something like that, with a person who's really well trained to do that. And there are some yoga centers in town that are great too.
Okay. I feel like I've been slumping since I was in kindergarten.
Well, hang in there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next we talk with a listener on line 3 in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. I have a question.
Okay.
Is there a dietary recommendation that would aid to increasing white blood count? I'm increasingly lower and lower white blood count, and I have none of the, when I'm asked questions, none of the apparent symptoms I can say yes to. So I have no symptoms that are traditionally connected to low white blood count. And I wondered if there's something I could do on a dietary basis that would address that problem.
Well, there have been some studies that have looked at immune status in general and looked at whether that can affect changes in white blood count per se, or maybe affect changes in your body's own ability to form more white blood cells. And some of those studies have looked at things like garlic and have looked at things like, herbs that are used more for immune enhancing, like astragalus, which is a pretty common herb that you can get in herbal form. In the actual herb or supplement, you can get it in tea
form. How do you
spell
that?
That's
A-S-T.
R-A.
R-A.
I think it's G-A.
G-A.
L-U-S.
Okay.
And
oh, yes, I've seen that
you've
on
seen
bottles,
that.
Yes.
Yeah, and there have been some studies on that. There have also been some studies on some of the different types of mushroom, wild mushroom combinations that may affect immune status and immunity, and there are certainly supplements on that, and also utilizing more of the mushrooms, and not that there's any miracle thing that's going to right away, I think, increase white blood cell count, but part of what we look at is maybe are there foods that might help with the precursors to help your body form more white blood cells. And I think the other thing we always look at for that is just, you know, are you really getting enough calories? Are you maintaining a good nutritional status overall? Are you eating enough protein and some of the other things that just affect cell formation in general? And sometimes you're doing all those things and it's just for whatever reason your own body doesn't seem to be producing as much.
Could it be also medication conflict?
Well, that could be. I mean, I think the thing with medications, you know, we know some about particular medication interactions with other medications and with some foods, but I really feel like there's a lot we don't know because, you know, my typical clients may be on 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 medications, and at that point we really don't know how they all interact with one another.
Right.
And that's where it becomes, you know, kind of a question mark with that as well.
You don't want to experiment.
Right.
And
it's hard to know.
No.
But, you know, obviously you'd want to look at everything from a medical standpoint to see, gosh, is there anything else that could be happening there? And then from a diet-wise, maybe look into some of these other immune-enhancing type foods or supplements that could play a role as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And,
okay.
I'll give it a try.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's talk with another listener in Champaign. Line one, hi.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, I wanted to praise the trail mix formula that you gave sometime in the summer with the proportions of just like cereal and fruit and nuts. Does work really well, so I want to say thank you for that.
Great.
But then I also, I'm late middle age, not quite to the point where I would need a colonoscopy, and my triglycerides have gone up, and I am trying to exercise, you know, by walking 2 miles a day. And I know when I looked on the web, the wonderful source of information that it is, that it said I need to reduce refined sugars. But I was also wondering, you know, should I just be cutting back on my overall calories and things like that? What can I do actively or proactively to lower my triglycerides? And I'll just listen, and thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Yeah, I think you're at a really good start for looking at exercise, because if you think triglycerides, I generally think of that as the way that fat's carried in the blood. And triglycerides, if you'd actually look at it physiologically, it would have a kind of a carbohydrate backbone and then the fatty acids that come out from it. And so we think of triglycerides as being related to fat. It's also related to carbohydrate. It's also related to alcohol. For many people, when they drop alcohol intake, that may decrease triglycerides for them. When they exercise more, that can decrease triglycerides. And certainly the other thing we look at pretty closely is the amount of, like the listener mentioned, simple sugars or sugar, basically, or foods that might be high in sugar, but also total carbohydrate. We have a lot of studies, a lot of the early studies in cardiovascular nutrition that looked at when people cut their fat intake to try to decrease lipids, sometimes they increase carbohydrate, and sometimes for those people that really shot their triglycerides up because they started eating maybe lower fat foods that were higher in carbohydrate, and that affected triglycerides. So one thing we look at closely is, are you getting enough cardiovascular exercise? We know that affects triglycerides. Are you carrying extra weight? Because for many people, even when they drop 5 or 10 pounds, that can decrease triglyceride levels. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a lot. Usually we say, you know, if you can lose ideally 5% of your body weight, if you are overweight, that can be a factor too. So watching portions and amount you eat. And then just total carbohydrate. So it's not the same as a diabetic diet per se, where you're really limiting carbohydrate throughout the day. But at the same time, you really want to watch. It may be that you don't eat a lot of sweets, but you eat 3 bagels at a time. Well, that's a lot of carbohydrate for your body to process, and that could affect triglyceride levels too. So the other thing on the flip side that has been found to be helpful for many people is increasing more of the good fat. In other words, you might say that for a meal, if you're eating a sandwich and you're eating maybe some chips and you're having fruit, and that's not a bad lunch necessarily, but it's probably pretty high in carbohydrate, that what you might do is have a sandwich, drop the chips, maybe add a few nuts that add more good fat, maybe keep your fruit, or maybe make those carrot sticks instead, so that drops the carbohydrate even more. So you bring your carbohydrates down, increase your essential fat or your good fat, and at the same time, then that may help too. So more olive oil, olives, nuts, seeds, things like that might have more fat that would be more monounsaturated fat can in some people really help with triglyceride levels as well. So I'd say weight's an issue. Activity is really helpful. Looking at total amount of carbohydrate that you take in, whether that's from sweets or breads or whatever it might be from. Not going on really low-carb diet, but maybe modifying that. And then really looking at, over time, are you getting enough of the good fats in your diet, too, that might help?
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and our guest this afternoon is Susan Kundrat. She's a registered dietitian. She's here with us today on the first Tuesday of the month because yesterday was a holiday. Generally, she joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. If you'd like to talk with Susan, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Thinking back to the suggestion that you were giving the caller about maybe thinking about what's on the plate in terms of carbohydrate and protein, and adding in a serving of nuts, a serving of olives.
Mm-hmm.
What is a serving when it comes to those things?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. A serving really is about what would look to be about 3 or 4 tablespoons. And so you'll see kind of on some of the information that's come out on nuts, I'll say 1/3 of a cup is about a serving. That's probably a little much for most people in terms of calories. So I generally say, well, if you have about 3 tablespoons, that would be a little less than 1/4 of a cup, and that'd be enough that you'd get good protein and fat out of it, but it's still not going to be as many calories. So that's probably, you know, you look at olives, that might be, you know, 6 or 8 olives, 10 mm-hmm. olives maybe, and then maybe 3 tablespoons of nuts. And that's a good way to gauge. I think if you'd eat that amount, and then maybe with it you have some fresh veggies or you have a small apple or something like that, that's actually a really good snack because you get plenty of fiber, you're getting something kind of sweet but not too much sugar, not too much carbohydrate, and at the same time you get fiber from the nuts as well, and you get some protein and
a
little bit
of fat. You get some crunch, you get some salt.
Yeah, salt, little sweet, little salt.
Little crunch.
Yeah.
Very good. I want to go back to the listener who called us, who was our first caller this afternoon. Maybe we need to talk about this a little bit more in that she was worried about being bent over, and this has got to be a concern for women. This is a concern for women and for men, for women with menopause.
Mm-hmm.
Osteoporosis is a big issue. What can, you know, what maybe you would review a little bit about with us calcium needs for older adults and the role of weight-bearing exercise.
Right. I mean, if you think about, and I think no matter how much we talk about this, there are still so many people who are at risk for bone breakages or osteoporosis, osteopenia, or kind of beginning osteoporosis. And if we look at calcium needs, I think there are a lot of different things. Calcium, really, we should try to get about 1,500 milligrams a day. And range will be anywhere from about 1,000 to 1,500 that's recommended. I really try to have my clients, unless they have some kind of problem with calcium or have calcium deposits or something that they need to work on, try to shoot for the 1,500 milligrams. So they're probably not going to get it every day anyway, but it's a good goal to kind of look towards. So if you look at that in terms of serving, you know, 1,500 milligrams is about a good 4 servings of a high calcium food. So again, realistically, are most people going to get that in? Some people will, but probably not a lot of people. So that's where probably looking at a calcium supplement is going to be a good idea as well, whether that's some of the chews that are out. You know, a lot of people really like the calcium little chocolate chews or caramel chews, and that might be, those are usually about 500 or 600 milligrams of calcium. So maybe it is feasible to say, well, I could probably get 3 servings in a day, maybe 1 supplement of calcium. I think the other thing that I see low in my clients a lot is protein. And particularly, I think a lot of my female clients, as they age and they just, you know, really don't have that much of a taste for meat, they're not going to prepare as much meat as they would prepare in the past. And so not that that's the only place to get protein, but that maybe had been a big contribution to protein in the diet. We know if protein's low, that affects bone as well as muscle and everything else. And so that's something we need to look at closely. Vitamin D is a concern in this part of the country in particular, particularly a day like today. But, you know, if we think we get a lot of our vitamin D from the sun and in the northern areas, we just really don't absorb very much of that. And, of course, we don't really get it during the winter. So being making sure you're getting vitamin D that would be fortified in foods and in a supplement, I think, is helpful. And then, like you mentioned, this bone-bearing exercise, or we have a lot of interest now in weight training, particularly with, as we age, mm-hmm. males and females both, to try to maintain some type of strength training. And I think it's really, really important to do that, because not only if you have more muscle strength, particularly in your abdomen and in your mm-hmm. back, then you're able to stand up straighter. So that's really helpful. And also we know that certainly if we've got more lean muscle mass, then that helps support our bones more, and our bones are also carrying that lean muscle mass, which makes them stronger. And so there's just so many reasons to strength train. And I think it's interesting, the place that I go, and usually where I go to lift weights, is a great place because I see people of all ages. You know, I've seen kids in there in the summer, and then I'm sure there were people there in their 80s working out when I was working out. I mean, so I think the thing is, you got to find some place that's, you know, reasonable cost, you can do it, where you do have some help available, so you know how to use the machines, and that even if you go through, you know, and you spend 30 minutes three times a week, or even a couple times a week, that's going to be a big yeah. help with yeah. what you're doing.
Also, the park districts and the Y organizations like that yeah. will have classes that are targeted. Even you mentioned earlier yoga. Mm-hmm. I know that I've been hearing an announcement, you know, classes targeting, you know, arthritis,
right,
joint pain.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something, chances are, if you look around.
Oh, yeah.
There's something out there that's easily accessible mm-hmm. and affordable.
Right. I think in the classes are really great, like through the local Y's or places, because usually those are really affordable too, or the park districts. And then you have that whole social interaction, which is great too. And they're fun when they're a class. And then you've got somebody monitoring you to make sure you're doing things right. And I think that's just really important, particularly as we get older or have any kind of medical conditions. And that's why I certainly help people with general exercise recommendations, but I think if there's any kind of concern you have, you should be working with a licensed exercise physiologist or a personal trainer who's really got a lot of experience in certain areas so that you can do things right. That's the big key.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrat, our guest this afternoon on the program. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions about diet, nutrition, and exercise. Give us a call, 333-9455. It's 333-WILL. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, if it would be a long-distance call for you, call us toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And when we began this afternoon, we were talking about breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that report that both of us heard on Morning Edition,
yeah.
they talked about the type of food that you eat, and they mentioned the glycemic values.
Yeah.
Maybe you would talk a mm-hmm. little bit about what that is and why is it mm-hmm. important?
Yeah, you might hear the term glycemic load or glycemic index, and it's really being looked at a lot more closely now. And basically, kind of this idea that not all carbohydrates or not all foods are created equal, particularly with the carbohydrate, not only the content, but the type of carbohydrate and how it reacts in your body. So what researchers have done is they've taken different foods and basically tried to figure out, how fast do they get into your system. And how fast are they broken down to basically blood sugar? And so if a food is broken down more quickly, it would be considered a high glycemic index food. If it takes longer for a food to break down and get into your blood sugar, then it'd be more a low glycemic index food. So, for example, you might hear potatoes, let's say boiled potatoes or so, might be a little bit higher glycemic index. That sugar gets broken down more quickly and turned to blood sugar, basically. Whereas you might have something like brown rice or, even sweet potatoes that tend to be a little bit lower glycemic index, take a little bit longer to break down and get into your system. I think the other factor, the other thing that's real important is think about what you eat with that food, because typically we don't eat just potatoes maybe by
right.
themselves. And so if you add protein or you add fat to that food, then all of a sudden then generally the glycemic index can be a lot lower because fat tends to slow down how fast a food is absorbed, and protein tends to slow down. And generally, you add more fiber, and that decreases the glycemic index. And so what we look for really are basically more whole grains, which we talk about a lot, and trying to get more fiber, which in general is more fruits and vegetables and whole grains, and then trying not to have foods that are as refined in carbohydrates. So if you do look, you know, a good example is this white rice, brown rice. You know, you look at that white rice, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That's going to get digested easily, a little bit more quickly than brown rice that has a fiber in it. And although sometimes those glycemic indexes really are tricky, because certain things you'd think wouldn't be quite as high or low really come out that way. And I think the other thing with glycemic index is, when I first started researching this area, you'd get all these lists and they wouldn't be the same. So you'd get a food list here that says, you know, rice is here, and then a food list here says it's different. And so I think it's not an exact science.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tell clients, I think the biggest thing is more whole grains and more natural foods if you can, that maybe aren't as processed, more fruits and vegetables, no matter what their glycemic index, because they're just going to be really good for you. And then you try to add protein into your meal, because if you do that, then that slows down the absorption of everything in terms of the nutrients, and you don't just have a quick release of sugar. For example, drinking a soda, we might feel like, boy, that gives us some quick energy, but then it's gone,
right?
Because it's high glycemic index, fast energy, then it's gone, and then your body's saying, hey, where's the rest of my fuel? And if there's no fuel left, it's pretty difficult to stay stable. And I think in that interview, they really talked about, if kids had just some sugar in the morning, something really sugary, they might have a burst of energy, but they can't.
But by the time they get off the school bus, maybe,
yeah,
it might already be shot. They
sure
were really singing the praises of oatmeal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. And oatmeal is definitely a low glycemic index food. If you just look at it, I mean, this one thing, if we actually would observe our food more, you know, you think about oatmeal or barley or any type of grain like that that's real chewy, and, you know, it makes sense that that's not going to get digested that fast, because it's going to take a little bit longer. And so you look at that too. Same thing with whole wheat pasta. If you have a whole grain pasta and you chew that pasta, it takes a little bit longer to chew than regular white pasta that's not as high in fiber. And so it makes sense that that would take longer to break down. But definitely, I think for kids, a big thing is helping them not have just something sugared. I think one of the docs there said, or researcher said, you know, he would never give his kid a sugared cereal. And if you think a sugared cereal, you think, well, that is pretty, you know, that pretty much breaks down. It really is. A lot of those are very high in sugar. So if that's all your kid will eat, try to get him to eat an egg with it or something, you know, because then all of a sudden the glycemic index is lower, because you have all the sugar, but you also have protein and fat. Or you have a slice of toast
whole
with peanut
wheat
butter.
Toast and peanut butter. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Peanut butter works really well to kind of bring down the glycemic load of the meal.
Okay. Let's take another call. A listener in Danville on line 4. Hi. Is the caller there on line 4?
Yes.
Hi.
I have a question about protein. You were talking about high-quality protein, and I want to know if it's all the same, like the protein that you get from a good cereal, is that as good as what you would get from eggs?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can mention a brand name.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a really common question, I think, with are you getting the nutrients out of that protein source the way you should? And we have ways to test protein quality, availability of protein in the body. And typically the foods that come up the highest are eggs, egg protein. And you think about the white is pretty much all protein, but there is some protein in the yolk. So we think about egg, we think of milk protein, which is a real high quality protein as well.
Uh-huh.
Soy protein is a very high quality protein. It's a vegetable protein, but actually amino acid quality is really good. And so that's a very high quality protein. And then certainly lean meats are good quality protein. They may not digest quite as fast if they have, you know, it might take them longer to digest, but they're good quality proteins as well. Beans and peas and nuts and seeds and things are going to also be really good choices. And you get something like cereal where you have some protein, maybe, depending upon if it's a whole grain or a lot of these cereals now that add additional protein into the cereal. A lot of times that's soy protein that might be added. And it certainly might get digested a little bit differently, but that's really our body's looking for a total amount of protein. And hopefully some of that will be high quality protein like milk or eggs. Or if you're vegetarian, if you don't eat those, then maybe you are replacing it with some soy, which is going to be another high quality protein source, and some nuts and seeds, and not relying just on, you know, mixing grains, which are probably not going to give you enough of all the amino acids you need unless you're getting a really good variety of proteins in there.
Okay. Can I mention a brand name or not?
Sure.
there's a Kashi Goline cereal that has a lot of protein in it, and it has soy in it too, and whole grains. I wanted to know if that protein would be as good as that you get from milk or eggs or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be a little bit different kind of protein. Those are usually soy protein isolates, which are still a good protein source. And cereals like those Kashi cereals or other ones that are out on the market like Optimum or some of those that do have maybe 8 or 10 grams of protein per cup, which is actually a lot. And you mix that with milk or soy milk, you could get 20 grams in your meal, which is really fantastic. And it's a big help. And I think those are, you know, well-utilized protein sources and a good way to get it, too. One of the things that I work with on my clients sometimes is, particularly if they're not eating a lot, you know, again, as, you know, this might be typical with people as they get older, and maybe, you know, appetite's not as good, they're not going to fix as many things or eat as much. That's where we really look at things like, gosh, you know, 8 ounces of milk, if that's 8 grams of protein, that ends up being pretty quite a bit to just drink a glass of something.
Uh-huh.
Or you take that, and if you don't feel like eating something solid, maybe you mix in a Carnation Instant Breakfast, or you mix in some dry skim milk powder, which a quarter cup might give another 10 grams of protein.
Uh-huh.
So you mix that in and find ways to make it real easy to get some of this quality protein, again, without necessarily having to make meat. Or you look at an egg, and one reason I really like eggs is because I think 2 eggs could be 15 grams of protein, which is 2 ounces of meat basically, and it's really inexpensive. And so it's another thing that it's easy, inexpensive, and it's usually something that if we don't feel like preparing a lot, we could at least make an egg or two, and that's not hard to do. So that's where I kind of like those sources as well, or open up a can of beans, which is an easy source.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of the Nutrition on the Move.
I want to say
your website and Nutrition on the Move all at the same time,
yeah.
So it doesn't come out the way it should.
Yeah.
So Eat and Move is her business, and she is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. And I've got it written down here. See, that's what I should do is look at my notes. And Susan specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. She's with us here today on the first Tuesday of the month because yesterday was a holiday, Labor Day. Listeners, you can join us with questions about diet, nutrition, exercise. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Maybe you could talk about, since we're back, it is essentially fall. Kids are back in school. Talk about some ideas for snacking.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping in mind all the things that we've talked about so far, how can we keep that in mind when it comes to an after school snack, or you know, maybe before bedtime, maybe not quite before bedtime, but, you know, maybe to get through that homework bump in the evening.
Right. Well, I think that same idea that we mentioned of trying to maybe not have too much just sugar, but at the same time have maybe a balance of a protein and a carbohydrate, that's something really easy to think about. For example, you know, cheese sticks, which would be, a lot of kids love cheese sticks. I like those because they're single serving. They got some protein. They got calcium. There's a lot of things in there. And so you think, well, maybe you mix a cheese stick with a granola bar instead of just having a granola bar, which granola bars are generally, there are some that are not that high in sugar and whole grain, but yet they're still going to have some sugar. And at the same time, then you get a little bit of protein in there and some calcium. So you think about that, or you mix, again, you know, fruit with a slice of cheese or something like that, that ends up being a good mix. I have a list that I brought, quick snacks on the run, that give, actually the listener who called in and talked about some of the trail mix and energy mix. Mm-hmm. I have a couple recipes for that on here, and then also some other snack ideas. You know, another one I have on here that's kind of seems pretty simple, you know, ramen noodles. Of course, a lot of college students like ramen noodles, high school kids too, and adults too, in fact. So, you know, you take something like ramen noodles and you make those, but you throw in a half cup of frozen peas. Well, peas are a pretty high protein vegetable. They're high fiber. And so you put that in with the noodles. And if you wanted, you could throw in some sliced turkey or something like that. And all of a sudden, instead of just noodles, you have actually a really good snack because you have a little bit of protein, more fiber, things like that that you could add in there. And I always like the old peanut butter and jelly sandwich or peanut butter on toast, something like that that's really easy because, again, you get protein and fat. Then your grain is your bread, your carbohydrate. Yogurt works really well, but yogurt is probably even better if you do throw in a little almonds in it or something in it. That
extra fruit.
Extra fruit, exactly. But yogurt itself, if you look at it, or soy yogurt, either one, is really a good mix of carbohydrate and protein. And if you get low-fat yogurt, you have a little bit of fat that tides you over, but it's not too high. And so automatically, that's a really good mix. Or taking yogurt, the other handout I brought that people can call in for and get copies of is fast, high-energy smoothies and shakes. And, you know, is a real good idea at night. I think this works great at night because it's not too heavy on your stomach. Just take a carton of yogurt and you throw in some frozen fruit and maybe a little bit of orange juice or apple juice, a little bit of ice, and you just make a smoothie out of that. And that works really super because you have protein, you have carbohydrate, you have fiber, you have extra fruit. You just, you know, can't really beat that. So that works really well, too, in terms of something fast and easy. And for kids, you can get some of these hand blenders that you still have to kind of supervise them.
Yeah, but the immersion blender
might be safer.
Oh, that's also easier than hauling out that mm-hmm. piece of equipment and cleaning it up afterwards.
Yeah, okay. A lot easier to clean. That's kind of on my list. When I work with college teams, I give them a list of things I think they should get when they live on their own in an apartment. You know, one's a crock pot, one's a hand blender, and, you know, maybe one would be something like a Foreman grill where they could quickly make meats and things too. And so that works great as a way to get some, you know, you can always consider that a healthy snack or mix it even with tofu. Works really well if you buy that silken or real soft tofu and you mix that with a little bit of juice and fruit and some ice. That works really great, or vanilla soy milk in those. So I think the thing you want to think about, and this is, you know, this is something that I think is just helpful. Where's your protein? Where's your carbohydrate? So instead of saying, well, I'm just going to have a couple cookies, maybe you have cookies and throw in a few nuts. So, or you have one cookie.
One cookie.
Yeah, maybe one cookie.
One cookie, half an apple.
Yeah, and because portion, again, is a big concern.
I'll split an apple with you.
Split an apple. And usually the thing that's funny, and I think if we cut up fruit, it really looks like a lot. It's amazing. I mean, you can cut up and you can have half an apple that's really sliced up with maybe a little bit of cheese or something, and that really looks like plenty. But if you just take the apple, you might think, oh, I just eat that, and it's really not going to be enough, even if you eat the whole thing. So I think some of it is helping ourselves make things look good and look like it's more food. Well, even at night, I think a great snack is a can of a lot of the vegetable soups that are out there. There's a lot of kind of healthier vegetable soups that maybe are vegetable and bean, and a whole can of a lot of those soups is 200 calories. So that's a very reasonable snack for most of us. I mean, that might be the same as four little cookies, but you eat this whole thing of soup. It's about 15 grams of fiber, which is a lot. You get protein because it has beans in it, and that works really well as a real satisfying snack around, say, 7 or 8 if you're going to stay up till 10 or 11 and you want something that's going to stick with you a little bit.
Yeah. You mentioned opening a can of beans.
Mm-hmm.
And we've discovered at our house that we can make refried beans for either a dip or for, you know, in a burrito or something. And we can do it a whole lot more healthfully than if you buy them prepared.
Sure.
They're really tasty. You just you drain them, rinse them, mash them up, add a little chicken broth, a little chicken stock, skip the fat.
Yeah.
And very good. And then you can add, you know, whatever spices you like, herbs, like cumin or onion powder or something like that. But that's really great, too. And that's a great little dip with some, you know, baked tortilla chips or pita chips or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. And I think making hummus. Hummus is some people like, but they don't often make. And that's pretty easy to make, too. And I have a team I'm working with on Thursday, and I have 2 hours with them to do all this quick cooking and snacks. And so I have a list of, I just send them the grocery list, and the coaches are going to buy everything. And one thing that I'm going to have them make is hummus, because I find most college, particularly female college athletes, love hummus, but they don't ever make it. And it's pretty expensive if you just buy it in the deli all the time, but it's really inexpensive if you make it on your own. So,
and how do you make that so it's on the healthful side? Because it can be loaded with You know what I'm trying to say.
It's got the
tahini or peanut butter in it or something.
Yeah, you put peanut butter in it. You could put olive oil in it. And so the whole thing, I think, is you add enough tahini so it has the flavor. And at the same time, if you add olive oil, you try to add not very much. Maybe you go a little heavier on garlic, or you can – recipe that I sent today was garlic powder. And then, you know, basically that's kind of what you have in it. There's not a lot that you have to add to it. You can buy the box mixes, too, which are not that high in fat that you can – some of those you just add water to. You add lemon juice to it and maybe the garlic and parsley, and you can add that to it, too, and that works out well to have a dip. And then the big thing is trying to figure out what kind of – if you have crackers, if you have whole grain pitas, that works well. And nowadays, I think you can buy – there's so many brands. You can buy the little bagels that are whole wheat, 100% whole wheat bagels, and those work well with a little spread. Or just like you're saying, the bean dip or hummus worked really great with celery or carrots.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a great snack. Sure. That's going to be pretty low in overall calories as long as you don't eat a whole half cup of hummus, which might be about 300 calories.
Yeah. There's the trick.
There's the trick. The old portion
again. Measure it out. Get used to what a tablespoon looks like.
Right.
And let's see if we can get another caller in this afternoon. Line 4, listener in Charleston. Good afternoon.
Hi. I bought a one-a-day vitamin and also a calcium magnesium, I guess, supplement.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that the calcium has in it duplicates of what the one-a-day does, that being zinc, copper, and manganese. I think there's almost 100%, 100 of the zinc, 50 of the copper, and 250 of the manganese, and it pretty much matches that in the one-a-day. Is that too much of those minerals?
Well, you're probably okay. Zinc itself, we try not to get more than 2 or 3 times the recommended intake, and so with generally about 15 milligrams, so 30, or really the upper limit's about 40 for zinc. So if you have 100 in both, that may be 30 milligrams, which is probably okay. Usually they'll add extra copper, because if you get too much zinc, it can cause a copper deficiency. That's probably why they added copper in that particular one you have.
Mm.
And then manganese, generally I don't think that's too much in terms of what you have in there. You know, the other thing this brings up, if you have the one a day plus your calcium plus a few more minerals in that, just take them at least 4 or 5 hours away from each other.
Oh, all
right.
Because That's good to know. And the D is duplicate, too. It's 100% in the one a day and 50% in the tablet, which actually they tell us to take it 4 times a day with meals. So just keep it 4 to 5 hours apart, you say?
Yeah, the one a day, and it may not be as much of a problem if it – I don't know if your – does your one a day have iron in it?
I don't think it does.
Okay.
No.
The big problem is usually if you take iron supplement with calcium, then those two can kind of compete for binding, so you don't end up absorbing as much of them. So in this case, it's probably not a big problem for you,
right?
Because if it doesn't have the iron in it, you could take it with the calcium probably and be okay with that too. You know, it's a good question, because there are certain nutrients that you really don't want to – you could over-supplement with if you're not careful. And zinc is one of those that, if you had – 5 times that amount, it might be too much for what
you need. But the manganese is okay, even though it's 250% each?
Yeah, I think the manganese, I don't think that would be a problem. We usually don't see that as a big problem for getting too much of that. And the vitamin D, definitely, I would say it's not an issue, not a problem for most of us. We just are really not getting enough vitamin D.
Why are some of these like thousands of times the RDA or whatever you call it, daily value?
Well, there are certain nutrients that do have a really big window of safety. You know, some of the B vitamins, for example, you could take a lot of certain B vitamins and probably not have a problem with them, because the upper limit is just so high. Some B vitamins, even, we don't have an upper level that we say to not go over, because we really don't know what it would be.
What about B12?
Yeah, B12 is one of those. That's a, you know, it's a huge amount.
Mm.
The thing that I always tell clients is you want to make sure there's a real good reason you're taking that much, though, because if you're just taking it to try to get the most you can take, it's probably not a smart idea. If there's some medical reason why you have... you need to take a lot of additional Bs.
Or you don't eat a lot of meat, maybe.
Yeah, well, B12 would be one that's found just in animal products. So, and as we get older, B12 is a certain vitamin that we don't absorb as well from food. And so you'll find more B12 in a lot of multivitamins and a lot of particularly senior vitamins, things like that. But the amount we need would be nowhere near that, you know, huge, huge amount. And so I do occasionally have clients who bring in all their supplements, and I try to review all of them for them to find out where they are. And sometimes they're way over with certain ones.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. So, I mean, it can easily happen where, you know, huge amounts of B vitamins over the recommended amount can cause nerve damage.
Do you need this kind of, I mean, it's related, the B12, do you need the other Bs in order to absorb it better, or can you take that separate if I just have a B12 supplement alone?
Yeah, I mean, generally you can take it separately if that's the one that you need, you know, in your diet. You don't necessarily need to have everything else with it.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's really an individual matter when you get to these large amounts, because you just want to make sure there's really a purpose for it, that it's not just trying to take so much to just get extra of everything.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your help.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. Mm-hmm. And there we will wrap it up. I do want to mention, though, that the handouts that Susan brought along today, the quick snacks on the run tip sheet and the high-energy smoothies and shakes tip sheet are available. Listeners, if you want to send us a self-addressed stamped envelope to The Afternoon Magazine, WILL Radio, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. That's 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, 61801. And we'll be happy to send those sheets out to you. And there we will wrap it up. We'll see Susan again next month, October, the first Monday in October. It will definitely be autumn then, won't it?
It will be, that's for sure.
Thanks so much to our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundra.